Hello and welcome back to the now monthly Classics World Chat Show. And this month it's all about getting started. We're all going to start somewhere, chaps, and we are talking about starter classics. So if you want to get involved in the hobby of old, cool, or even not necessarily cool cars for the first time, these are the cars we would recommend. Roll the credits. So before we kick off with our choices for starter classics, let's talk about what a starter classic is, because it's getting quite a broad term. I think for me, it's got to be accessible. It's all well and good saying that an NSU R80 is a good starter classic. It's not, but you can't find one and you can't find bits for them. So for me, it's got to be something easy to find and well supported.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think it's got to be something with half decent club support or parts availability or both. I didn't necessarily, with my choices, worry about price, actually.
Doesn't have to be, no.
Because the risk of that, of course, is if you only focus on classics that are under £1,000 or £2,000, is you're going to really narrow your choice. So,
but also, it might not be that you're a young person getting it. You might be an older person who's just got a bit of spare money and fancies it.
Exactly.
It doesn't have to be cheap.
Exactly. To be honest, having a car of any sort is a luxury, and having a classic is a certain level of commitment.
Absolutely.
To which you're generally better off spending a little more money than going completely cheap ending up with something that you cannot work on.
Very true.
Or that you do the work and you lose all the money you put into it.
We've all been
yeah, some of us more recently than others.
On that topic then, let's start with toe just dipping in the water, chaps, the modern classics. I know a lot of you will say, oh, it's too new to be a classic, but if we're talking about something from, say, mid to late 90s up to, let's say, mid 2000s, so 20 years old or so.
Yeah.
Mr. Wheaton, where would you kick off on a modern classic?
Well, it won't come as any surprise to you that when I suggested that we do three starter classics, I ended up with a list of about 50.
I was going to say, you can't remember it.
But it was quite useful. So I started rattling through a few. Now, with the modern choice, you've probably got more cars at your disposal.
Definitely.
Because a price point that's accessible, the parts would generally be quite good. So I rattled through a few. R50 Mini would be an obvious one.
Great
for
choice,
me. There's still
yeah.
loads
yeah.
of those around. They're actually quite reliable.
Mm.
They don't seem to have rusted away
really,
like
no.
the originals do. MGF, I like. There's still loads of those
great
at good
value,
money.
Yeah.
Great support, they're fab to drive. Even the sort of hydrogas stuff is well supported. Now you can either get the hydrogas refurbed or you can get coil spring conversions, LRTFs. But I went closer to home. I ultimately landed on my very own Audi TT.
Yeah.
Mark 1. I would go with the coupe, not the roadster, although people will ultimately sort of make their choice there. I still love the 180 brake version.
I can't think why.
Well, when I was looking for mine, the reason I sort of went for the 180 over the 225 is that they generally were not only more abundant, but in better condition. The 225s
yeah.
tend to have had a harder life.
You see a lot of badly.
I think the engines are also, the 225 version is also more peculiar to the Audi, whereas the 180 is obviously used in a myriad of VAG applications.
They're incredibly tunable.
Exactly.
So,
if you want to, you can tune them. If you're not, it doesn't matter. The parts are available and they're not that expensive. So they're relatively cheap to buy, they're cheap to maintain. There's actually a really good owners club for the Audi TT. There's good forums online and on Facebook.
Reliable?
And stuff. Well, I mean, maintenance, I've done loads to it,
yeah.
but, you know,
it's
not let me down. I mean, you know, things like coil packs were probably its biggest problem, but I mean, a lot of it's just wear and tear things, which,
yeah.
you know, if you buy them at a certain price, you've got to expect to replace those bits, right? But, you know, you can still get them for £1,000.
Yeah.
I wish they were more, because I really, I've been tempted to sort of sell mine on and make a bit of a profit, but they're not at that level yet. They're still relatively on the floor.
I think that's a great choice. And for me, the TT defines modern classic, because you would never believe that was a 25, nearly 30-year-old design.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it still looks fantastic.
But let's not forget, with the TT, yes, the 180 is great, but there is a lot of variation you can get.
V6,
you can get VR6 if you're really, really that brave. Or, you know, there's the standard 180, there's 225, there's Quattro, there's Cabriolet, there's Hardtop. There's a lot of options, and all of them, more or less, are pretty reliable, being newer classics,
yeah.
so to speak.
Great value,
yeah. Great value, and
yeah,
you kind of just
fair play. So I'll let you
as long as it doesn't end up hurting you too much, you're fine.
Over to you, Sam. What was your modern classic choice?
Well, I've done MX-5 in previous videos. I've even done, I'm pretty sure I did SW20.
MR2 yeah, we talked about that before. Yeah.
previous episodes, and now it's time for the MRS or the. I don't actually know what the
Mark III. Yeah,
it's a Mark
ZZW30.
Oh, well, there you go. I'm pretty sure that's a real oil weight, isn't it?
I think you're right. Well, you have to do regular oil changes, as we
yes, yeah. Sometimes you have to do regular engine changes. But in general, they are well supported. There's loads of them out there for a very broad range of price points.
As little as a grand or so.
As little as a grand, as much as you could probably go into one for five if you want to really, really.
You can pay 10.
Such fun to drive as well. Oh,
yeah. Honestly, best drive. It's fantastic.
Yeah, mid-engine, right laugh, tiny little thing, roof down. What more could you possibly want, really?
They're actually at a point in the market where, I remember the Mark 1s used to be.
Yes.
Like, really cheap. Risk of the ones being a bit rough if you choose incorrectly, but at the moment, they're at a really good price point where you've got a nice choice between a cheap Brave Pill one or, you know, three or four grand will buy you a lovely one.
Do you know the other thing with those, and that they might be unique in the Japanese car world, the Mark 3 and Mark 2, is they don't really seem to rust. So the one we had, you might remember the yellow one, which was on the third engine, that was a Jap import, so it had no rust proofing on it. It had lived in this country for over 20 years and been used all year round, and there was not a spot of rust anywhere on it.
Wow, so it's just everything else then.
Yeah, so you'll have to change the engine, but you won't have to weld it. So, yeah, fair play.
But yeah, engines aren't ridiculously stupidly expensive either, should it come to it. But
and it should, it's the Celica.
It's the catalytic converters that spit parts back up into
it. Yeah, so if you buy a pre-facelift one, take the pre-cats out immediately.
Yeah, just keep an eye on these things and you should be all right. Decent club support, decent part support.
They're very enthusiastic.
I think that's probably going to be true of many of the modern classics we mentioned. Part of the virtue of them being modern classics is that parts are, in some cases, still actually being made new.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, definitely want to think about for me.
Can't argue with that one. Well, I'll keep the 90s and 2000 sports car trend going then. This is an underrated one. You and I talked about these, and I will fly the flag for these for a very long time. BMW Z3.
Yeah.
Because they're so cheap. You can go on your choice of marketplace or auction platform now and find one for 1,500 quid or less. They only really rust in the sills, and BMW themselves will sell you a brand new sill for less than 200 quid.
Nice. They're definitely having their day now, aren't they? Definitely, I think they lived in the shadows of S2000s and MX5s.
It's Pierce Brosnan's spec, isn't it? Everyone's sort of looking back on those and going...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they're incredibly well supportive of parts. Even brand new parts from BMW aren't expensive. Mm. Every single body panel bolts off, so if you've got knackered paint or rust, take it off, put a new one on. You can still buy so many parts from them. The community for them is massive. You can get everything from a 1.8 with cloth seats up to a Z3M or a big 3-litre or whatever. They're all great fun to drive. I think they look superb. I think they've aged really well in the right spec.
Even the sort of much maligned four-cylinder.
They're good cars.
It's actually not. It's not quick, but it's a nice car to drive.
It's what anyone in MX-5 is. Yeah. I think the
question is, drop top or clown shoe?
I go drop top because I'm on a bit of a convertible phase at the moment.
Yeah,
the sun is shining as we film this, and I was literally on Facebook Marketplace last night looking at Z3s. So
and they share a lot of parts with the E36.
And E30. Yeah, so they're very well supported. Yeah. And generally quite reliable. So go and watch our buying guide on the Z3.
Or our road test.
Or the road test, indeed. Mr. Whedon drove one. So 4, 6... 1.8, 2.2s, 3 litres, M's, coupes, convertibles.
Yeah, the price range is
massive. From £1,000 up to £30,000.
Personally, I'd always buy on condition an engine for a Z3. Just enjoy the roof down.
Just don't buy an automatic, because the automatics are
slushy, isn't it?
But yes, Z3, I always fly the flag for those cars, because I think that is the... Yeah, that's a good call.
But some of our crowd are going to be really bored with all our modern classics.
Yes,
we need a traditional choice.
Why do you kick off then, Seth? If we say traditional, so if we're talking a bit of the chrome and velour and bit of vinyl seating, bit of old 60s or 70s style, what are we going for?
Well, as ever, I had to go through a bit of a journey to get to my final choice. So Mini was my first choice. I still really want to own a Mini at some point. I don't know why.
Jeff's got a few spares.
So is Paul.
That's just half of them don't work. That's the problem. I still can't get over the price of them. That's the problem. Like even like Rover Minis, the
four, five, six,
early 90s sort of early cat cars are starting to fetch good money now. Mm. So I kind of dodged the Mini in the end, but everyone would be forgiven for wanting to choose one of those because they're still abundant. We know about clubs, and of course, even if they're rotten,
you can repair
panels.
You can
rebuild them for sure. And then I went Citroen 2CV for much the same reason. I've never owned one.
Was it Jack Grover who had one for
that? Yes. And a few journalists who know these things, you know, Chris Harris, I think's got one.
Johnny Smith's got one.
Andrew Frankel, Johnny Smith. So a few sort of notable motoring scribes have got these things. So there's obviously something in it. I've always liked Triumph Heralds. I've said that probably a gazillion times before.
You love
Heralds. That one of those would be on my list. But I ultimately landed on perhaps a very safe choice of the Morris Minor.
Can't argue with that.
It is a safe choice.
Because it is a safe choice. And I think even though the earliest cars were 1948, so 77 years at the time of recording, there's still loads of them around, particularly sort of 1,000 on spec ones and the slightly newer ones with a better engine. You can very discreetly upgrade them for more modern use with better brakes and ignition.
You can put
and
a later engine in if you want
all
to.
All that kind of stuff. I love the fact you can need to take your pick from a sort of four-door saloon, a convertible, a cabriolet or whatever.
I was going to say, a traveler. Drop top, I ask yet again.
Yeah. I think there's part of me wouldn't mind going for a drop top, but then I'd worry about picking one that wasn't an official drop top and a
converter. A lot of the conversions are very good. Yeah. So if you do your homework. Don't buy one off a friend in a shed who's done an angle grinder.
Well, we had one at Pioneer when Paul and I went last. I think we've got a video on that coming soon, whether it be a living with or a road test escapes me. But still, it was an actual original drop top as well.
The original drop tops are worth, but actually, most worth of the, a bit more, if the conversion has survived this long, it's probably good.
But I just think, you know, there's... It's so iconic as a design. Yeah. It absolutely epitomises that kind of post-war optimism with motoring. The club is still second to none. And, yeah, getting hold of parts is going to be dead easy.
Nothing drives like a Morris Minor either.
Maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. But it's. I just think they're really good. I think that would be my trad choice.
And a very good trad choice, I must say.
Thank you.
Over to you, sir.
Right, well, it is the trad choice, really. It's a B, but it's not a standard one. It's a GT. You've got to get a B GT just because, for me, they look a bit cooler.
Agreed.
They drive about the same. Whether you go for chrome bumper, rubber bumper, I think there's, what, three series of them? So it's chrome, rubber.
Yeah.
Obviously, the rubbers, you've got, they sit a little bit higher. They're a little more wallowy, that sort of thing. But to be honest, you can undo all of that. And to be honest, I think rubber bumpers are probably going to start going up. More so than the chromes are, just because what first thing everyone does when they buy a rubber bumper MGB is they get rid of the rubber and then they put the chrome back on or they leave it stripped or they lower it, this, that, the other. And the few that are still original are the ones that are probably going to start going up. Either way, MGB GT, obviously parts are everywhere. The club is massive, whether you're part of MG
Owners Club,
MG Owners Club, MG MG Car Club. I think we're going up to see them soon, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Keep an eye out for that.
they're massive.
Yeah, they're absolutely everywhere. They're still somehow completely abundant in a variety of conditions. Obviously, the nicer ones will command a bit of a premium.
But they're still affordable.
But they're affordable. They're comfortable inside. I fit.
Yeah.
And a GT has a rather capacious A, cabin and B, storage area as well. You can fold down that rear seat, get yourself a bit of a shooting brake thing going on. It's really just a lovely thing. It's simple, it's great, it's easy to work on, parts everywhere, club support is abundant. And it's pretty tough to go wrong.
It's funny, they get criticised for being ubiquitous, but they're ubiquitous for a reason. They were a choice back in the day, like, and so they still are.
Like so many cliches, it's a cliche because it's good.
And
I mean, you can go watch our video on the Jubilee edition, like I said. You get to an MGB, even if you've never driven an old car, and within 10 seconds, it just feels right.
Everything's where you are.
There's no struggle. Yeah,
the ergonomics are surprisingly good for a car of its age and of its origins.
And the fact that if someone of yours or my height can fit in one, anyone can.
Of MGB GT, MGB Roadster appeared in Friends.
There you go.
When Ross got a sports car, he chose an MGB. It's iconic.
Yeah, and then there was that episode where Joey pretended he had a box.
Porsche.
Yes.
Made of cardboard boxes.
We'll gloss over that one. My trad choice, we're going British again, because most of the trad choices are British.
Yes.
The vulnerable AD016. So Morris, Austin, MG, Riley, Wolseley, Vandam Plas, Innocenti. It wore every badge in Britain at one point, apart from Jaguar, I think. 1100, 1300, they're cracking fun to drive. Go and watch the video. We compared it to an Allegro. We drove one on its own. They are brilliant. They're huge.
You just had a smile from ear to ear when you did that.
Yeah. That 1300 GT is my favourite car I've driven this year so far. I absolutely loved it. They're great fun. They're like a more grown-up Mini experience. You've got back doors if you want them. You've got more room. You've got a better ride than a Mini, I think. But you've got the same great parts support. You know, the A-series is well supported. You can get all the hydroelastic stuff, every body power. They do rot. They know how to rot.
How fascinating. But they all do.
They do. They're all of our cars. 60s and 70s cars rot. They just do. Absolutely. But you can get everything for them. The club seat for them, again, enormous. And yet, while you say Minis are rocketing up to sort of 6, 7, 8, 9 grand, and if you're up that kind of market, the 60s and 70s Minis, they're double figures now. They're 10, 12, 15.
Yeah, yeah.
And AD016, I've seen several for sub 3,000 quid. They're not perfect, but they're usable.
Yeah. Still, and they're not as abundant as Minis, are they? But
no,
they're arguably nicer to drive, a bit more spacious.
Yeah.
So
I think if you want a proper classic, and also if you're of a family persuasion, you can put kids in it. You know, you can put seatbelts in them and take them to shows, and you can get a traveller if you want. Yeah, I think they're great. And even the nicest one is still better value than the equivalent Mini.
Yeah, and you'd argue you probably get more looks in them as well because people don't see them as often.
Because
as
they're
so, especially at shows.
And again, they got a bad reputation for the whole Basil Fawlty scene. You know, you've got to mention Basil Fawlty when you mention AO 60.
Yes, Princess Anne,
the Scimitar, etc., etc.
Yes, no, I think they've shaken that off now, though. I think they're a classy, really nice car. Even that one we had in the Trading Up Challenge a few years back, you know, it wasn't the nicest example, but the amount of people walk past it, that's a nice little car. You know, they're very sweet. Yeah.
No, definitely. Good choice.
But obviously, these are traditional. What if you want to stand out from the crowd in the world of old cars? We narrowed our third one down to wild cars, and they can be, within reason, pretty much anything, as long as you can justify it as a first old car or first classic or whatever. So, Mr. Wynn, you've got a very diverse...
Run us through the list. We've got some time.
Wildcard, I deliberately didn't go too wild. It was more about perhaps a braver choice than a wild choice, I think is probably where I went. So much less obvious, but still perhaps an interesting choice. And there were some modern classics on my list, like I mentioned Audi TT as my modern classic choice, and actually an Audi A2, is a really quirky. And again, I know a few people that have started to dabble with those because they were... an engineering marvel when they came out, and I don't believe Audi made any money on them.
No, they were well ahead of their time,
but,
you know, space frame,
if that was launched today, that would be seen as a really credible kind of city car, and I think it's just ahead of its time.
A lot of people have started picking them up as well. I know Smith and Sniff were talking about it. I'm pretty sure
Matt Pryor has bought one for Autocar.
Cars. And so they're so economical. I know that's not an interesting topic, but it was 70, 80 miles
very, very, very cool car. Again, sadly, I've been around long enough to remember where they came out new, but that's...
you were at the launch.
I wasn't quite at the launch, but I would have been. BMW E36 3 Series, I think, it's not exactly wild. It's a probably very sensible choice, actually.
It's interesting.
Loads of choice.
Lots of choice from convertible, coupe, four-door, compact.
Yeah.
Should you want to really wild
Exactly. And so that's why I sort of had that down on my list, because I'd certainly recommend one of those, because there's almost every shape, size, model to suit a budget. So I quite like the E36 as an option. I did write down Alfa Romeo GTV or the Spider, as in the 90s one, because you owned one of those.
I did own our old one.
You weren't that enamored with the Twin Spark, were you?
I wasn't that enamored with the Twin Spark, and from what I gather, speaking to Matt Furious Driving fame, the Twin Spark is almost on a case-by-case basis. The one in his 145 was fantastic, and it felt really, really strong, and mine never did. And he said he had a 146 with a similar story. So the Twin Spark is a bit hit and miss, but also as a first classic, I'm not sure I could recommend it, because the parts are quite hard to come by. They're not particularly economical, they're not particularly practical, they do rust. And
you need to know someone who knows someone, basically.
Yeah. They're not bad cars, but I personally, if you want your first old car, I wouldn't necessarily choose an Alfa.
Fair point. Yeah.
But what would you choose?
So for my final choice, ultimately, was a Mercedes R129 SL, inspired a little bit by our recent twin test that we did against the R230. It generated so many comments, very favourable ones. People, I think, seem to judge the R129 as that kind of cut-off between Mercedes of old and what we now consider to be a new generation of Mercedes, which aren't necessarily built to last the apocalypse. They're built to last a good few years. They're still well-made and everything. But the R129, I think, is the perfect marriage between the old-school Mercedes with all those build quality virtues, but modern technology to still be dependable on a daily basis. Again, there's good club support in the UK for Mercedes, and no doubt around the world as well. Good independent specialists out there will still look after them, and parts availability. So,
of course, it's largely based on a 1.24 as well.
Yeah,
exactly.
So carried over. It's changeable.
You know, I mean, and a six-cylinder version is no slouch.
No,
it's not a ball of fire, but it's not slow either.
I said it in the video. I'll say it here. It's a German 2JZ. You slap a turbo on the side of it. You're laughing.
It's a perfectly smooth, respectable car.
And the V8 is actually surprisingly. If you, particularly on the earlier V8s, they're not the gamble you would think they are. Yeah. They're not bad on fuel. They're well supported.
I mean, I would love a V8 one just because of that noise. But actually, the straight six one in particular, I think I would rather like as well. So that would be my my starter classic wild card.
Good call, sir. Wild card. Hit me.
Volvo Amazon.
Ooh.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you don't see very many of them, which is what I think makes it the wild card. But they're incredibly dependable, being Volvos. I think they're great to look at. They're good to drive too. As a matter of fact, it probably would have sold by now, but there is one up currently at Morris Leslie that I went to see when I did the auction preview. And that one was owned by an ex-Cosworth race engineer
who
has had a fiddle around under the bonnet and managed to get 150 horsepower out
of it. They're fairly tunable.
They are fairly tunable. I mean, people in the States are known to swap LSs into them.
Oh, God.
That's...
Yeah, but they put LSs in everything.
they do MX-5s a lot.
What stood out to me with the Amazon, because I've driven a couple, they're a 50s car that drives so much newer than their years.
Exactly.
They feel like a 70s car.
As all Volvos are. I mean, they're incredibly ahead of their time, even from a safety perspective, naturally being a Volvo.
3-point seatbelts.
Yeah, 3-point harnesses. In what is essentially a car from the 50s is really saying something. But no, they're comfortable, they look good. Part support is, obviously it's not an MGB.
There are a couple of notable specialists out there.
There are notable specialists out there. There is decent club support in the UK. And when you take them to places, I feel like that's probably a theme of my choices. When you take them somewhere, your choices too, when you take them somewhere, people are more likely to have a look and go, oh,
yeah,
I haven't actually seen one of those in a while. Because I don't actually remember the last time I saw one on the road.
No, I think what I like about Amazon as well, that the people have tended to personalise them in a way that's quite tasteful.
Yes,
you can always go that sort of hot roddy type look
rally
if you really want to.
Spotlights.
Rally or patinaed or just absolutely.
They do patina really well.
So I think that's a really top choice.
I wouldn't have thought of that, so it's a good one.
That one at Morris Lesley actually was a little bit personalised too. It had some sort of mini light style wheels, but it also had a really nice dark green metallic paint job.
Yeah, nice.
Tasteful.
I don't like that. I think that's a good choice. So my wild card is, not to get too similar to my own stable, but it's small, it's Italian, it's got a tiny engine, and you will have to thrash it together. It's not the same joke. No, it's the Fiat Panda 4x4. Now, we're not talking about the newer shape 169, which are great in their own right. I'm talking about the technically Mark II Panda, if you get really pinnickety with the details. But we're talking about the 80s one, the one where Steyrbusch did the four-wheel drive system, so you pull a lever and it's four-wheel
and specifically
drive.
The 4x4.
Yes.
We're ruling out the original.
Not ruling it out. If you, a classic Panda, I stand by the fact, I think the original Panda is the best Italian car ever made. I stand by that. But the 4x4 gets that extra niche cool factor. You're going to struggle to find one now because they are highly prized. They did rot away. There are very few of them left. You might even have to stray abroad to actually find one.
Jeff wants to know your location.
Exactly. Jeff wants to know. But I think they're absolutely tremendous. And they're really well supported by the likes of Ricambio, who are in London, but they're an Italian car specialist. And our man Simon Goldsworthy found all sorts of bits for his Panda from them. So the parts are great.
Mm.
And there's still communities of people who off-road those things because they're all but unstoppable. Because they're so light. There's places in the Alps where they still use them as police cars.
Proto-Jimny.
Yeah, because nothing will get where a Panda 4x4 can. And again, it's unusual. You can personalise it if you want with the big tyres and the bull bars and the spotlights if you want to be a faux defender owner. Or you can keep it entirely standard like a Sizzly.
How many are left, though? I mean, there can't be many left.
Very, very few, this is it. And to be honest, as an easier option to get into, you could look at a Suzuki Jimny because they are, as much as they rot, they do still exist and you can weld them up. So. Yeah. Your mileage may vary, but for me, if you can find an original Panda 4x4 that's in usable nick, it doesn't have to be mixed, I don't think it should be, just good usable nick, I think you've got a charming classic that you could use every day, but you can go anywhere, and you know that the day that your Nissan Qashqai or your Ford EcoSport is in a ditch because it's got a millimetre of snow, the Panda will saunter on past. And
you've managed to sneak in your SUV.
Yeah, it was a matter of time, wasn't it? You did mention another option there, but speaking of, are there any other honourable mentions that you might like to bring up? I know you've got all yours out already, as you find your shot. You got any other thoughts?
I very nearly said for the wild card, and I vetoed it on two counts. One is it wasn't really wild, and one is that you'd already got Mercedes. 190e.
Yeah,
I think
good.
A staff car, particularly even the four-cylinder ones, they're great cars.
And they are becoming scarcer as well.
A lot cheaper than an E30 as well.
Yeah, that's the truth.
But even the six-cylinder ones are cheaper than the equivalent E30s. Mm-hmm. They're really well made, and if you've never had an old car before, they're simple, they're dependable, they're safe. You can put the kids in it if you've got family and all that. Yeah. You can't buy an estate.
I do have another choice if you want to throw one into the mix.
Oh, please go on.
It's the first gen Ford Ka Ka.
Okay, yes.
Yep, yep.
And I tell you what, I think the design is of its time. I think it will go down as a very iconic piece of design.
I think it's a great
car.
Thing.
I love the fact that it's actually based on a bit of a chopped down Mark III Fiesta or whatever it is, I think. Mm-hmm. And the mechanicals are kind of Mark I Fiesta.
Ken engine.
Yeah, it's like Ken engine stuff. So anyway, it's got lots of classic attributes, even though it's a mid-90s car.
Yeah. And such as the way it rusts.
Yeah, exactly. They do rock for fun, basically inside to out.
Yeah, by the starting from the filler cap.
But, you know, because they were on sale for a long time, so you can get sort of an early noughties one, which is still the original design.
I saw one the other day on an 07 plate.
Yeah,
that's the one. It doesn't feel like it, does it?
It
doesn't look like an 07 car.
I've got a friend with a sport car. Which is equally cool, I reckon. Obviously cooler, but no, they are lovely little things.
That's a random choice.
My sort of honourable mention didn't fit into any of our categories. It's not really particularly modern. I wouldn't say it's a traditional classic, and it's not very wild these days either. Porsche 94. Arguably the most accessible Porsche outside of a really ratty Boxster.
They're
not the fastest things in the world, but they're easy enough to work on, especially as Porsches go. I mean, it's basically a Volkswagen engine on the bonnet anyway.
Lots of parts
available, and they are tremendously popular these days. Yeah. I've got a good number of friends who've got them. Even one who's got one of the old in-period racing ones. There's one at the Transport Museum in Taunton.
The one in Taunton.
There's another one that is actually still on the road. It's owned by a friend of mine. But no, they're not the fastest things in the world. They still drive like a Porsche does.
They look amazing.
They look better than a 944 does, personally, just by virtue of being a little more diminutive. And I feel like they fit the proportions better. The 944, granted, you've got the big boxy arches and all of that jazz, but...
If you can get a turbo,
don't get a turbo for a starter classic. For Christ's sakes, do not get a turbo for a starter classic, because...
You can supercharge them, though.
You can.
There's a man in somewhere in Eastern Europe, I think in Poland, who makes a supercharger kit for them. So,
wow.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, once you've got your start, perhaps consider that, but make sure you're well and truly started.
I think that's a really eclectic mix, chaps. If you're looking to get into the old car hobby, we've given you myriad choices there, well over a dozen cars. And I think I'm right in saying every single one of these is available for under 10 grand, and in some cases, a lot less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, by my maths, yeah.
Absolutely affordable. If you're on a budget, if you're a young person, you can't get classic insurance, you might not need it.
Well, if you do end up choosing one of these starter classics, let us know. And crucially, get out on the road and enjoy it. Take it to a car show. Yeah. You know, don't just park it up and keep it for a pension fund.
The point of a car is to drive and enjoy. Don't buy something to make money on it. Don't buy something to tuck it away. Enjoy it for what it is and what it's worth. So
enjoy the classic car hobby, because you might be your first classic, but you probably find it won't be your last.
Yeah, it is a problem, and it's hard to shake.
Exactly. Well, if you're similarly affected, don't forget to subscribe to this channel for all the future content. Ring the bell so you know when all our videos come out. Like this video with a big old thumbs up, because it does help the algorithm, helps other people see this video. And until the next time, from us... Thanks for watching, and ta-ra!
Ta-ra.